Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast. I'm Ollie Lum, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Seddon. This week we spoke to 800-meter specialist, Lindsay Sharp. Lindsay is a 2-time Olympian with a PB of 157. She's been on the circuit for a number of years now and has made numerous major finals, picking up medals at the European Championships and Commonwealth Games along the way.
Boom, yes, welcome back, guys. Goodness me, it's been a crazy week, lots of dramas, but super excited for this one. We spoke to Lindsay, brilliant guest, following on from Butchard as well. We spoke to her whole career from start to finish, 2012 Olympics, 2016 Olympics. We spoke a lot about, you know, her coaching setups. She's changed quite a lot over the years. She's not been afraid to change and why she thinks others should not follow her steps, but be very critical about the environment and the training setup they have, because they need to know what works for them and stick to that throughout. We also speak about her decision to have a baby and take this year out. She does confirm for us that she will be back after she gives birth to compete and chase, you know, who knows, Paris, world champs, all the competitions over the next few years as well. So look, tune in. It's a cracker. Get out for your Sunday run and enjoy. We'll catch you next week.
Yeah, first of all, Lindsay, thanks for coming on and welcome to the podcast. We just thought we'd start with talking a bit about the trials, and obviously it went down yesterday, so it's Monday today for those listening. After the trials went down Friday, Saturday, Sunday. What did you think of it, first of all? Like, obviously, there was no TV coverage, so we had the live stream with that. So first of all, what were your thoughts with that, really, with the live stream itself?
Yeah, it's difficult because I think it was obviously really disappointing that it wasn't on TV, just because of like the lack of exposure for athletes and sponsors and stuff like that. But I actually thought that the coverage on YouTube worked really well. I thought it was, I don't know, it just seemed to flow better, and there was no like cutting to the like studio and stuff like that. And so I think for the people that are like, realistically, the people that are going to be watching that are going to be proper athletics fans, and that's like, I don't know, that's what people wanted, was just like pure action. So I think it works really well, but in terms of like money and stuff like that, like, I don't know, maybe in the future they can monetize YouTube, but I don't know, like in the short term, I don't think like any money was made from it.
I think being a like athletics geek, I thought it was quite good to watch, because like you say, and they just seemed to, when the track events were on, they're filming track and then filled in between and stuff, and it worked well. Commentary was good. So I thought like the actual coverage was good, but it's for us, I mean, even for us, actually, like I was watching it on a tablet and stuff, and it's just a bit of a pain to like get onto the TV, you know? And I think that's where they would lose a few people, like unless you have got a tablet or an Xbox or something to watch it on. You know, I guess most TVs are smart TVs these days, to be fair, but yeah, what are your thoughts on that, Lum?
Yeah, I think I just wanted to touch upon, Lindsay, like you mentioned the money side. Like, how much as athletes do you think that kind of influences, say, so you're still with Adidas, are you?
No.
Okay, but sorry. Anyway,
that's right.
But, say like a brand like Adidas, New Balance, Nike, whoever it is, like how much do you think they look into whether the British champs are on television versus YouTube in terms of what they're offering you guys?
I think when you look at it on its own, it doesn't seem like that big a deal. But if that's the way that athletics is going in the UK, then I think we do have a problem, because when you look at the US, the reason that there's so much money in contracts in the US is because it's like such a big market, and there's so much exposure. Like, I don't know if you watched any of USA's, but it was like It was mad. And if you looked at like Sha'Carri Richardson or like some of the other athletes, like the number of followers they had this before US champs and the number of followers they've got afterwards is like insane. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that brands are going, isn't it? Like that's all they're interested in is like exposure, following, like content and stuff like that. And it's difficult to, you know, I don't think it's like they'll necessarily say like, oh, these athletes can offer us less, but they'll just be less interested in like, there's just less in it for them. Like there's a difference between being on like primetime BBC One and being on YouTube. It's really only going to be like the true fans that are watching it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think about Sha'Carri made 400,000. It's probably more now. 400,000 followers in like a matter of days. And like she's reached, I mean, Michelle Obama was tweeting her, wasn't she?
Or retweeting. Yeah.
Yeah, like that level of exposure is nuts. So yeah, when you talk about mainstream TV and Instagram and Twitter, it's a huge changer for the brands.
Yeah, and like USA's is notoriously hard to like watch, and it was actually like almost easier to watch USA's in the UK than it was to watch British champs.
I was waking up every morning watching it. I was absolutely loving it.
Yeah, it was really good.
I mean, let's move on to the champs and some of the performances then. Like what was a standout performance for you this weekend?
Oh, it's hard. There were so many. I actually think like the person of the champs was Jodie Williams. I think like what she did in the four was incredible, but I didn't even know she was coming back to do the two. And to do both and to double the Olympics, I think is like incredible. She's had some hard years and I think maybe people doubted her. And yeah, I think it's amazing that she's come back and worked hard. Obviously, I was really interested in the women's eight. And like I watched Keely train in Dubai in January, and I knew then that like the girl was going to run fast. I knew she was going to make the Olympic team. So it was pretty cool to see like her carry that form from January through to now. And I think like she's racing really maturely, and I was pretty impressed by her run. Men's 15 and 8. It was just, I think like the middle distance events generally are just like crazy just now, but I think most of it went to like kind of to form. But I guess we'll see like what the selectors do in terms of the third spots as well.
Yeah, I mean the big names kind of all qualified, and I mean in the women's eight though, obviously Muir, I think she's expressed a bit of interest, she wants to go in the eight and the 15, which is fair enough. But at first I was a bit concerned that she would just be going in the 15 and was just doing the eight of the trials, which she'd done previously. What's your thoughts on athletes like Muir doing that sort of thing, like competing in an event they maybe won't compete in at the global champs?
I think that the only way we're going to avoid like complications in terms of selection is if everyone does the events that they want to do at the champs. I think in events like the 8 and 15 especially, like we have the depth at the moment to be able to say, like, if you want to double the champs, then you have to double at trials. I think that's the only way around it. If that means extending the timetable of like British champs out, then like, that's what has to happen. But if you tell someone that they don't have to do their main event or whatever, and then there's only like a limited number of discretionary spots, if another like person gets hurt or ill, like you're really limiting like the choices. I think it should just be top three.
As well, yeah, I agree with that as well, top three.
Yeah, but then I had that argument with someone last week and they were like, what happens if like Dina stumbled out the blocks?
Yeah.
I was like, well, there's people in the US that haven't made the team because like they messed up at trials, so.
Well, it makes, I guess.
What happens if that happens at the Olympics as well? Like, same thing, like you've got to learn to be performing at champs. And I think like we've discussed already, like the US champs has been so good of a spectacle, and partly or a lot of it is because of that first three go reason, because you see it there and then. Like we're not waiting until today. Obviously today's Monday, like, so we'll have some selection out today hopefully, but especially for the athletes as well, it's nice to be able to cross the line, I'm sure, and know you've got it, rather than being that kind of agonizing third or fourth spot maybe if you've got the time.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, what was it like watching Andy then and not competing yourself? How was that?
Well, first I'll say like me not competing, like I feel so far removed from like being able to be competitive in like that race that it doesn't even enter my head that like I would have been there. And like, I think people find that weird. They're like, oh, do you not really miss it? I'm like, no, because I guess I'm like 5 months into not feeling like that.
Yeah.
Like if you'd asked me, like when I watched European indoors or whatever, or yeah, European indoors, like, yeah, that was hard because I was still like in good shape then. Yeah. But like, honestly, see, like I've never been like a huge athletics fan. Mm. Like I'm not like, well, until this year, I never like would sit and watch a whole meet, and now I'm like this mad athletics fan that like watches every meet. But I just hate watching people like I care about. Like it's just horrible. I get so nervous.
Do you think you weren't as big as a fan when you were competing because you're so dialed in on competing?
I think so. Yeah, like it's actually so draining watching athletics, and like. I was knackered from watching the weekend, and I'm like, oh, it was a hard weekend. And I was like, you've literally done nothing.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I'm usually just like so focused on myself that I'm like, yeah, like I check that, you know, people I like and people I care about have done well and stuff like that. But yeah, it's tough. It's tough being that involved.
Like, you know, some athletes like to watch, you know, keep checking in on competitors and watching competitors all the time. And some, you know, sounds like you just want to not worry about them and just focus on yourself when you're training.
Yeah, I think, I don't know whether it's because I've just, I do love the sport, but I'm not like a mad stat geek or anything like that. Like, yeah, I just more enjoy the process of like getting fit and trying to run fast myself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Right. Yeah, I think that's enough for the trials recap. Let's talk about a bit about your own career so far. Obviously, congratulations on the baby and stuff like that. So you're due, is it?
Yeah, November, so I'm halfway now, which is mad. But
how are you finding it?
Pretty good, actually. I think I hate saying it because, like, I know some people really struggle, but I've had, like, a really easy ride. Like, I've not had, like, honestly, I've been able to train, like, until 12 weeks, the intensity was less, but I trained, like, pretty much normally.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to still do, like, loads of gym. It's only really in the last couple of weeks that it's been, like, physically a lot harder. But yeah, I've not been like sick at all, like honestly, like nothing. I feel like guilty saying it because I know people find it really hard, but I'm like, oh, this is easy so far.
I'm a bit clueless about this sort of thing, but do you think it's just because you're fitter and like you say, you were exercising up to like 12 weeks and you're still exercising now? Like, do you think that just helps and goes a long way?
Yeah, I think if I'd stopped early on, I would have found it really hard to get back into it.
Yeah.
But a lot of it, to be honest, early on was like mentally I just needed to still be like doing something. Like I'm so used to like training every day and like having that routine in my life that I didn't want to go from like nothing. Like I went from having the goal of like making the Olympic team to like that wasn't my goal anymore, and that was probably the hardest part of it, was adjusting to that. So I tried to like still train and have that routine to like keep some sort of like normality of what I've been used to for the last like 10 years.
And I guess it's going to make it much easier coming back if you obviously have plans to come back. Do you want to just share that a little bit as well?
Yeah, like the first, like if you'd asked me like 4 or 5 years ago, I would have been like, there's absolutely no chance that I'm going to be that person that like gets pregnant and then comes back. But I don't know, like your thoughts on that change as you get older and your priorities change. And even probably the first few weeks, I was like, there's no chance, like it's going to be too hard. Like, yeah, I'm just not like, not that into that. And then I think I got like a really good reaction from announcing that I was pregnant, and I was really worried about that. And that coupled with like just feeling pretty good running, and also like it's just like weird feeling of like just feeling like empowered by like seeing, you see like Alison Felix or whoever like do what they've done and just prove it's possible, and like also prove to like your child that you don't have to like give up on your dreams just because that you gave birth to them.
Yeah.
Like I never want them to be like, oh, I feel so bad, like mum had to stop because she had me. So yeah, I'm definitely planning on coming back, and that's probably one of the reasons why I'm making sure that I train as well as I can just now. But I'm also like aware of how difficult it can be, and I might not be able to do it and I might not want to do it, but I want to keep the door open.
I think, yeah, in previous years you've seen people like Alison Felix, and I think like Faith Kipyegon's come back and is flying, and it seems like it can be done. As I don't know, maybe 10 years ago it's kind of considered like that's crazy, you know, you could never get back to the shape, but I feel like now it's kind of normal.
Yeah.
which is really good to see.
Yeah, and if I hadn't seen those people do it, I probably wouldn't have felt that it was possible. Like, yeah. As you say, like 10 years ago when I was 20, I was like, no. And like now I'm like, oh yeah, that's actually pretty cool. So
the next 3 years is worlds, Olympics. Like, it's some 3 years to like aim for and keep motivation up. There's Euros in there, there's Commonwealths in there. So as an athlete, like I think this is the most exciting time to be an athlete, this sort of 4 years.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's so much on, and like even next year there's so much on, and I know like that'll be tight in terms of I'm not gonna be able to start back running really until like the new year. So mm-hmm. I don't know, I just got to like keep ticking off goals and stuff, but we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. If we could just rewind a bit, and just if you don't mind talking about how you kind of first got into the sport at the start, because I think Andy was kind of saying like last week that he almost had not your kind of classic upbringing in athletics in terms of junior stuff. Am I right in saying that you kind of started when you were quite young?
Yeah, both my parents were athletes, so I kind of grew up like in the sport. I tried loads of different sports, but yeah, I spent like a lot of my childhood at the track. My mum was still running after she had me and my sister. And like, I was never like, it was never like, oh, this is the sport you have to do or whatever like that. It was just like, it never really entered my head that there was anything else I wanted to do. Mm. And don't get me wrong, there was times where it was crap. Like when I was like 14, 15, 16, or even like 18, like I had years where I didn't compete at all because I was injured or whatever. Mm. But I don't know. It just always felt like that was what I was to do, but not in like a pressure way, just like, I was born, that sounds really weird. I was like born to do it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's weird. Like, you do sometimes find that, like, because it's what your parents are doing, you just fall into it and you almost didn't think any other sports existed. You know, you just, you know, you wanted to do that sport and you were just interested in it, like your parents. It's normal, really.
Yeah, like I played hockey at school. Like, maybe it's just that I wasn't that good at any other sports either. And like, I don't like doing things that I'm not good at. So I guess that was a large part of it as well.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because like when did it, I mean, did it sort of creep up on you, the level you were competing at in running, or did you always have like goals, even being like, you know, even 14, 15, you set yourself goals and you want to be certain levels? Because it sounds like, you know, with Andy, it just sort of crept up on him and then he sort of made like a split decision.
I think him and me have got like polar opposite like experiences of growing up in the sport, yeah. And like making an Olympics or whatever. I can remember like 2004, I would have been 14. I think this is right. It's either 2014 or 2015. I won my first like British title, like 3A's. Mm-hmm. And it was like indoors. And that was like the first time I met Dave Scott, who at the time was like the Nike sports marketing, but he's basically since 2011 been my agent. Right. And he's like, that's when I realized that like you were good, which is mad to think that I was only 14. Mm-hmm. And that's also obviously the year that Kelly Holmes won her double gold. And I can remember being at my friend's house and like it was on the TV and my mum was there like with her mum. My mum was like, you need to watch this. This is like a moment in history. And I was like, oh yeah, it's cool. Like, but wasn't really paying attention. But like, I can remember like the media afterwards. I was like, oh my God, that's insane that someone from Britain like just did that. And that was like, obviously she's been an idol growing up. Like that year was probably like a huge moment in realizing how much I loved and wanted to do the sport.
Yeah, changing.
How important do you think that is then, that we have kind of British athletes like performing on the world stage, like for youngsters, I guess, because I think that's where we see kind of trends with different countries doing well in different disciplines. And it seems to come, I guess, like 5-10 years after you have a big superstar who does well on the global stage. So like, how important do you think that is just in general, really?
Yeah, massively. And I also think that having champs in your own country has the same effect. Like London 2012, Glasgow 2014, like that was what, I can't work that out, 9 or 6 years ago, something like that. So within that 5 to 10 year thing that you're saying, and like I get messages all the time from people that are saying like, I watched that and that's what like made me want to do the sport and like whatever. And yeah, that's I guess the same as what happened to me, like watching Kelly. And I think I felt really lucky to be a British athlete in athletics at that time, like 2012, 2014, even 2017. But I guess there's also the younger generation who were lucky to be that age then and be so inspired by those championships and those performances. So yeah, it has a massive effect.
Let's talk about 2012, Lindsay, like qualifying for that. We've seen like people put their place in the Olympics. But just talk about, I mean, you just smiled mentioning when I mentioned 2012, like, and anyone I've spoke to who actually competed in 2012 says it's absolutely nuts. Like, talk about firstly qualifying for it and then being involved in London 2012.
Yeah, the qualification for London was like really complicated for me because I hadn't really made a team like before 2012.
It was a breakthrough, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I graduated from university like the same week as I went to the Olympic trials. Like, I wasn't really like, it was an outside goal of making the Olympics, but all I did was turn up at the trials and like did like my best and I won it. And I didn't have the time, and like, that wasn't really like, that wasn't my fault at all. Like, that's just the situation I was in. Like, all I did was do my best on the day. Then I went to European champs, and that was like my last chance to do the Olympic time. And I didn't do the Olympic time, but I got a silver medal, which was then upgraded to gold. So the selectors like had a bit of a difficult decision to make, and they chose me over like other athletes who had the A standard at the time. There was like A and B standards. And it was a pretty like controversial decision. And the athletes in question like appealed my selection, and like I had a pretty rough time because that was like my first experience of making teams, and then like I was having my competitors like appeal my selection. And like the process at the time was I had to read their appeals and reply to them.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was brutal. Like some of the things that like people say, like, I don't think they knew that I would read it, but it was just like I was just like so confused by like what I'd been thrown into. And then that kind of affected like my preparation for London. Like I was meant to do Monaco Diamond League. I pulled out because I was like, this is literally like pointless. Like I got so much going on. But like I went to London and I did okay. Like I made the semifinals. I think at the time that's probably as best as I could have done. Mm-hmm. I went there as a two flat runner. Like that's just not good enough to make the Olympic final. But they very much selected me to give me experience for the next Olympics. So I feel like it took me like 4 years to justify them taking me to London.
How did you, obviously you said with the appeals and stuff, you know, when you finally got to London, like did you almost feel guilty for being there?
Yeah, I definitely did. Like I found it really hard. And Di Green was captain of the team. He's actually like a really good friend of mine now, but I can remember he sat me down in the holding camp and he was like, just to let you know, like you deserve to be here. And like you fully justified your selection and like just enjoy yourself. And like just someone telling me that like made such a difference. But I think emotionally I was pretty like drained from the whole thing.
Yeah. But you did go on and push on, and the next, you know, the next championships, well, next Olympic Games, but there was also in between that, there was the Commonwealth Games and the Euros, and that, especially that 2014 season, where you medaled in both, correct?
Yeah, I can't remember which way. I think it was, yeah, it was Commonwealth's first, and then yes. I think it was less than 2 weeks later, it was Europeans. And like I was just like riding a wave of confidence. Like if you watch my rounds at Europeans in 2014, like, I was so tired like after Commonwealth, and I'd been ill, I'd lost like loads of weight, but I was just running on confidence, and that's exactly what having confidence can do for you. Like I was just, I front ran races, like it was just mad.
Confidence is huge in the sport. Like I say at the trials this weekend as well, you know, people would have had loads of confidence and people wouldn't have had confidence, and it can just make, like you said, it can just make such a difference, can't it?
Yeah, and it's just, it's not something you can buy, and it's not something that you can like force. It's just, it's really hard to like put your finger on it. And yeah, I definitely saw that at the weekend.
Often like the most dangerous runner is the most confident one. You're like, okay, well they're just, you see their results just going like this, you're like, man, they're full of confidence. Like I don't care what they've run, they're going to be dangerous.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing that a lot with the younger generation. Like they're just riding that wave at the moment of, you know, like no pressure on their shoulders and just enjoying each race. And it is cool to see, but obviously the older generation don't like it.
You mentioned earlier kind of the importance of having like those home games. How significant was that Commonwealth Games up in Scotland? And it seemed like Scottish Athletics did a great job like supporting Scottish athletes for that as well. And how kind of important was that for your career as a stepping stone and just as a great moment, I guess?
Yeah, like again, it still doesn't feel real to me that like we had a Commonwealth in Glasgow. Like as a city, that's just not what Glasgow's like. Like Glasgow's pretty much football through and through. Hampden's like a football stadium. The track's not there anymore. So it's not like we can even go back and like compete there. Like I'll never ever forget like both at London 2012 and Glasgow 2014, like when you're walking out to your race, like the place was like vibrating. It was so loud. Like, and it was just weird because people would be shouting like your name specifically. Yeah. And it really honestly did like push you down the home straight. It was like the added, like every British athlete or Scottish athlete or whatever, like had a bonus because they had like literally the crowd pushing you down the home straight. And there's no way that I would have got that medal in Glasgow without the support of the crowd that day. Like I remember coming down the home straight and I was way out of it and I was like, I have to do this. Mm. Like there's so many people watching.
I was at London 2012 and just and London 2017 as well. Like it was the same. Yeah. British fans just do a job on, they don't care who it is, they'll just scream your name or scream for the British athlete. And it is just, it's incredible. But mate, like Scottish Athletics, like I was close with an athlete who was like on the brink of or like Commonwealth long list or whatever you want to call it. And like they did some serious like infrastructure in really being supportive and making sure like they were just providing the best setup for their athletes, even ones like on the long list and stuff. And talk about that a little bit, like going into Commonwealth Games. So say from like 2012, 2013.
Yeah.
I remember them just being really helpful with athletes, getting them in races they probably wouldn't get in. You know, providing them support, you know, people to talk to, physios and stuff like that, that they probably wouldn't get at any other time. And it seems like they just got it right at Scottish Athletics, because I would probably say like you are the leading home nation in Great Britain right now, without a doubt.
Yeah, I think we had like Stephen Maguire in charge at the time, who then obviously went on to British Athletics, and he came from like America, so he knew what high performance was. And he was in touch with athletes like personally on the day to day. And I think that made such a difference because someone was on your case, like someone was checking up on you. And yeah, we had like a really good setup leading into 2014. They did an incredible job, even down to like things like we had a holding camp. It was only in Scotland, but like, yeah, we got looked after really well. And I think you can see the effect of that now, like that next generation of Scottish athletes have come through, like, and just putting that work in and making sure that the Scottish athletes did well in 2014 has had like a massive effect, like six, seven years later, and will continue to do so. I don't think it's a coincidence that we're seeing so many good Scottish athletes now, having had that in 2014.
Yeah, without a doubt.
For sure. Obviously, like following on from that in like 2015 and 16, obviously we come around to the Olympics again, and you mentioned the qualification for 2012. How different was it going into 2016, obviously having some sort of global and European and Commonwealth success already, like with a bit more, I guess, pressure on yourself and expectation, I'd imagine.
Yes, it's very different being like a 22 year old going into the Olympic trials, like having no pressure on you, having not done the time, to being like 26 on funding, expected to make the team. But I actually don't even remember the Olympic trials in 2016. I think like for me, it's not like a highlight of the season. I love like traveling. I love going to meets abroad. I love big stadiums. I love trying to run fast, and like British champs isn't always like that. Like as we said at the start, like because a lot of pressure on the weekend, it's sometimes not the most enjoyable. I think I finished second to Shalena, if I'm right. But yeah, it's very much like get the job done of like finishing top two and just get yourself on the plane. And I was running really well in 2016, and I was on like a good kind of trajectory. But yeah, it was I'd say the bit that was more difficult probably was from trials to the Olympics, like knowing that I was capable of making the final. Like, because there's all very well like making the semifinals in your first Olympics at 22, but I knew I was in shape to win a medal and make the final in 2016, and I had to do that.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the final a little bit. Obviously, you were sixth. Actually, let's talk about rounds in 800 meter running, because, you know, you're one of the first. We had Alex Bell on quite a while ago, but yeah, you know, 800 meter running, I think, is the hardest event to make a global final in, just because, and you see it at the British Champs as well, how hard it is to qualify for the final. So talk about how do you prepare for that as an athlete? Do you just sort of bank on being the quickest in the race? You know, how important are tactics, a clean run, all that sort of thing to make a global final?
Yeah, I think the 800 qualification is really hard. And like, for example, I kind of got screwed over a little bit in 2015, purely on like the seeding. Like the seeding can be on your side or you can get screwed over by it. I had a really hard semi in 2015. And I was also in the last semi. And so you've already watched like the other two semifinals. You've seen, like, I saw Shalina qualify for the final in 2015, and like I knew, like, going into the last semi-final, like, you know what you've got to do to make the final. And I, if you watch my semi-final in 2015, like, I just ran like really tense, because like I was just stressed about like having to make the final, and like I had a hard semi as well. But then I think I learned my lesson in 2016. And like on the world stage in the 800, you've got to run the semi-final as if it's a final. Mm-hmm. Because I genuinely think that the semi-finals at that level are harder than the final. Like, mm-hmm. once you're in the final, anything can happen, just run. But the semi-finals are like brutally hard.
anything can happen in 800 meter run, can't it? It really can. Yeah. And obviously you made the final, and then you came sixth in the final. The three athletes that beat you they can't compete anymore because of high testosterone levels, right? And yeah. That came into play in 2019. And you mentioned earlier about your Euro medal getting, you know, bumped up to a gold. You've faced kind of a lot of setbacks in that sense, where you've been almost competing on an unfair level. Just talk about how you've managed to keep going in the sport and like stay, you know, so positive and competing at the highest level still today when you face like that controversy, basically.
I think like what I touched on earlier is like I've never been like a massive like athletics fan / like geek. Like I've always done it because I love the process of like, I never open up very well in a season. Like I love the process of like getting fit and like getting fast in a season. And that's literally what I focused on each year, was just like start off running like 204, it doesn't matter. Like, can you get down to like 158? Can you get to, like, from not being able to break 204 to like making the Olympic final?
Yeah.
And like the process of being in absolutely no shape and indoors to being like in a world or Olympic final. And like, don't get me wrong, it's been hard. And I think more so over the last couple of years, like after Rio, it was hard because I had a lot of backlash after like speaking about 2016, but sadly I've grown up in the sport knowing that there's like always, like when I was growing up it was like all about doping and like people always got medals upgraded, like Jenny Meadows, etc. But I think if you like get too bogged down in that, like there's no point in you doing the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just love the process of like getting into shape and running fast. Like I can't control what politics are going on in the sport, like what other people are doing. Like at the end of the day, you just gotta do what you can, enjoy it
yourself. Yeah, I guess like that's all elite athletes, you know, they're good because they just focus on number one and that's themselves.
Yeah, we get called selfish all the time, but
hey, to be fair on that, actually, like how does you and Butchard work, you know, because usually you see couples and like there's always one who is kind of like the admin role, you know, kind of like runs around after the other, but it's rare you actually have two athletes who are like so elite, because athletes are notoriously selfish and they need like you know, a good support team around them. So, I mean, how does that work on like a day-to-day basis?
I think like personality wise, we're totally different. Like he's like the most chilled out person. Like the things he does on race days stress me out. Like on the weekend, he made pancakes from scratch, like on the day of his race. Like there's just absolutely no way I'd do that. Like he would go, not this weekend, obviously, he would go for a haircut like 1 year with Chris O'Hare on the day of British Champs. Like he just does bizarre things. So we very much just like their own things. Like the decisions that I make, he wouldn't make, and vice versa. And like we train so differently. Like he never takes days off. I like religiously have a day off every week. Like I do no miles, he does 100. So like we both have like our own lives. And like sometimes like he annoys the shit out of me because of his decision making, but like I just leave him to it. It's his life as well.
Does it ever like a conflict? Like, would there ever be a point where I guess it would become like a bit of a conflict when he would be advising you on your training, or do you advise him on his training? Or like you say, do you just clean cut and just let him do it and don't like comment? Because sometimes that can become, you know, when like parents are in your ear about, oh, maybe you should do this, maybe your coach is wrong and stuff like that. Does that ever come up or not really?
Yeah, like every so often we'll like say like,
yeah,
oh, you should do this, you should do that. But like I do think, yeah, like you've got to like see it as like if he had a job, like if he was an accountant or whatever, and I was like a teacher, like we wouldn't get involved in each other's careers. Like that although we do the same thing, like we're so, our approach to it is so different, our training is so different. So I just gotta let him do his thing.
Yeah. He mentioned about I think last week about he was doing his 300 session and you were on the bike and you were pushing his split times along a bit. Do you enjoy that? Because I think he mentioned you obviously quite well renowned for training hard, and do you like him to push himself?
Yeah, he was going too easy. Like he could do what was run down really easily. So I was like, just go a bit faster. But I never actually saw myself as like wanting to coach, but I actually really enjoy like pushing him, like pacing him on the bike and stuff like that. But I don't know, like that's about as invested as I can be. I think I can only do it just now because like I'm not using my own energy trying to compete. Yeah, sure. Tiring.
Yeah. And on that, like, yeah, kind of like I just mentioned, like, I think, yeah, you are quite renowned for training hard yourself and being able to push yourself. Like, has that always been the case? Like you've always just found you're able to like grind out really hard sessions and things like that.
Yeah, like I really miss that feeling just now, like being able to push myself really hard. And I'm not like your typical 8:15 athlete. Like I'm not really a 4:08 athlete either. Like I've always been like quite specifically 800, and I don't know whether that's more like naturally or whether that's just the way I've trained, but I've always found it hard to like kind of have other people to train with because of like how specific my training is. So I've just had to get used to like from a young age just being able to like push myself hard on my own. And I don't know, it's weird, but I just love that feeling of like some people hate like doing like a hard 600, 200 or something like that, but that's like my favorite thing to do. I love it.
I think the 800 is just such a, there just seems to be so many different ways to be a good 800 meter runner, doesn't there?
Yeah I think we've seen that even more in the last couple of years.
I
think it's the most interesting event, but I'm biased.
Yeah, everyone just seems to come at it from just such different ways.
Yeah,
in that sense.
Yeah. You mentioned kind of the specificity in your training there a bit. You've had like quite a few coaches in your career though, haven't you? So how has it kind of changed? Because you seem to have been successful with all of them. And so have you kept sort of a similar training level, and has that come from you, I guess, rather than necessarily moving to a different coach and adopting a different system?
Yeah. My mum's always had like quite a big involvement in my career. Like a couple of my coaches when I was like early on, like when I made London and stuff like that, my coach lived down south, so my mum was the one that was kind of like on the ground up here looking after me. So she really understands me as an athlete, and she would feed back to like coaches then, and she's actually coaching me now, so, or she was until February, and she will be when I come back. But I think she's been a large part of my career. But and I think I've also like probably like being criticized for having lots of coaches. But probably like one of my biggest piece of advice is to an athlete is like, if you know something's not working, if it's not like, if you know, like hand on heart that you don't trust it 100%, then like do something differently, because you can't stand on the start line not feeling confident in what you've done. And I think I've learned so much over the years about myself and training that I know what works for me. Mm. And that only comes with experience. But like Terence has probably been my longest coach, and he got me to like sixth in the Olympics in 2016. But his training philosophy, I felt, changed a lot, like 2017, 2018. And that was quite difficult for me, because I know like what we achieved together in 2016.
Yeah.
But our like beliefs around training weren't the same in 2017, 2018. So it was difficult for me to walk away from that, but I like just didn't feel it was working and wasn't getting the results that I wanted. But like, to be honest, now I could probably like 80% coach myself. Mm. I know I need to, I would never do it, but I know like what I need to do. I know what works for me. Like, I don't need to be doing like 50 miles a week. Like I can do like 30 and that's fine. I can train on the bike for like, you know, like tempo type stuff or like recovery. I don't need to run. I've never run twice a day, really. And like people would look at my training and be like, it's absolutely bizarre, but it's just, you know, I've got injured from doing like different things like running twice a day or doing more miles.
Yeah. It does sound pretty interesting, just touching on the surface of it. Yeah, I guess like I remember when you left Terence, and it was quite a bold move. You sort of came home. Was it during an indoor season or something? You left him. But I think, like you said, if it's not working and you're not going to get confidence from it, that's probably the worst thing. Or even if it's working and you're not confident in the process, then it's just as damaging, isn't it?
Yeah, like I raced that indoor season. I wasn't running that well. I didn't feel like myself. I had like my legs had like nothing in them. And like after 2016, we like moved to San Diego, and that was like my last chance at making it work. Like I really wanted to stay with Terence, like, but I felt like I needed something new after 2016. Like I needed a new focus. Like I'd had all the shit about like the final and stuff like that. And so I knew that I'd given it everything, like moving to San Diego, and I still like didn't feel it was working. And I felt that the focus had become like too much on improving my weaknesses rather than like, like actually just like using my strengths. Mm. And like I ended up losing my strengths because we tried to work so hard on my weaknesses. And then I just became like bang average.
Yeah, that is actually a really interesting point. And I think sometimes it's the athlete who gets all these ideas and they kind of pitch them to the coach. But that's interesting you say the coach was the one who sort of changed, you know, how you were training. And it's almost like when you have these mad seasons, like it's a really good season, 2016, you just want to look at it and go, well, let's just do pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah.
and hope you just come on and, you know, you improve because you've got another year of doing the same thing. And sometimes, yeah, I totally agree with that sort of weaknesses. I think Seb Coe's dad once said about, you know, weaknesses, he's like, if you've got a strength, just keep working on that because it will become so good and so overpowering that, you know, your weakness won't even matter. As if you try and be jack of all trades, and it just doesn't work. It's like when you see 4 8 runners and they're like, okay, I'll go to the aerobics and just get a good 15 and I'll be a great 8 runner. And it's like, it doesn't work like that. Like your strength is the fact you can go through in 23, 24, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's an art, isn't it? Like you could give like 20 athletes the same training and it would work for one of them. Like that's just what's so mad about the sport and also about coaching is like, but that's why I find it so hard to be a coach, is I don't know how they do it.
yeah if you don't mind, let's just touch upon, like, if you wouldn't mind just giving us kind of an example of what sort of training you would actually do, like on a week-by-week basis. Obviously not at the moment, but if you're in full training, like what does that look like, obviously with the bike and stuff, because we've seen a lot of athletes come out and talk about like the cross training and doing other things for their aerobic stuff.
It's like a normal, like every evening basically is like bike, like just steady bike, so like the same as going for like a recovery run or whatever. I would never do double days running, so I'll just go through like mornings instead. Monday would be like a run, a big focus on drills. That's always been a huge part of my program. Like I worked with Rainer Riders Group in like 2014-15, And then like either short sprints or hills. And that's pretty much in the program the whole year, just to never go too far away from like that top end speed. Tuesday would be like, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday would be like track sessions. Tuesday and Saturday would be the main ones with like more volume, but honestly the longest reps I would do even in the winter would be like okay. And if I did longer reps, they'd probably be off the track. And then Thursday would always be like 150s or something like that. In the winter would be like slower than 800 pace, but by the summer would be like faster than 800 pace. And then in the summer, there'd be like a lot of intensity. So basically like Monday, Tuesday, potentially Thursday and Saturday would all be like 800 or faster. Maybe like a couple of 1500 pace sessions in there just to get me through the season. But yeah, like a lot of intensity. And then recovery days, Wednesday, Friday, and then Sundays off. Mm-hmm. And then I've always done a lot of gym as well, like in the winter, more like circuits and stuff. And then like more like plyo and like heavy lifting stuff. And then I guess in the winter and in the summer.
So I guess that intensity for you is key. And the more like running around you do around it, you can't keep that same intensity, can you?
Yeah, and like that's how I get into shape as well. Like that's why I will never be someone who runs fast indoors in January, because like I just haven't done, like I need to do 6 to 8 weeks of like specific 800 work, and I can't do that in January and then also do it in the summer. And like I used to get so stressed about like seeing people running fast indoors, and I'd be like, I'm literally in no shape. But I just learned that like that was just how I was.
It's good to be able to trust and know that you can get in shape, because I've seen it with a few athletes as well. They'll see people running doors and they'll panic, and yeah, they'll try and quickly get in that shape. And it's like patience is key if you know you can produce outdoors.
Yeah, like I think there was one year, it might have been 2014. I think I raced 19 times outdoors.
Wow.
Yeah, and like I started off at like 206, I swear, like I was so bad, and I think around 158 that year. Like, you just never predicted at the start of the season that I would have done that, but that's how long it took me and that's how many races it took.
19 races in a summer. I mean touch upon that, like traveling, like how does, so obviously you being an athlete and on the Diamond League circuit, like I've always found it pretty fascinating, because I'm almost thinking like races can be a hindrance for athletes because it's travel. And like, talk about how like on the Diamond League, you can be competing in Switzerland one day, then you're back home, and then you're competing in, I don't know, Monaco or whatever, and then you've got a championship. Like, how do you cope and plan your training so you can still get your training in around these races?
Yeah, I think that it's all down to planning, and it's very easy to say like, oh, I want to do like all these races, or like I want to do Monaco, I want to do this, I want to do that. But like there's sometimes times where we had to say like, yeah, okay, in an ideal world you would do that race, but like you're gonna have to put a block of 2 weeks of training in, otherwise you're not going to be able to carry it through to like, so we definitely fitted blocks in to like go back to like a couple of 1500 sessions or whatever, just to like keep a little bit of a base. But I just honestly, I love, like that's what I really struggled with. I got injured like in August last year, but I just really struggled with seeing how people were enjoying I just didn't get it, like
not traveling.
Yeah, like not traveling, doing it in front of like no crowd, like it just did nothing for me. Like, and I think I grew up spoilt by crowds at like London, Glasgow, like even London in 2017, and like I just this doesn't excite me.
I mean, I see that 100%, and like I think football players have found that as well, because obviously they're used to playing in front of 80,000, and they've been, some of them have been half the players they should be.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Yeah,
and it's weird that like crowds, you know, that turns you on and that gets you going, that makes you want to compete. So did that influence like the decision to obviously have the baby this year?
Yeah, it probably did. Obviously the Olympics were meant to be last year, which would have been a bit better for me, but I think, yeah, I really struggled with like how different the sport has become in the last 2 years.
Yeah,
And like, to be honest, even the difference, like I can remember standing in the call room in Rio and turning to Melissa Bishop, and we both just looked at each other and we were like, is this it? Like, yeah. Like the atmosphere in Rio was like nothing on like any champs, like Glasgow or like Olympics in London.
Yeah.
Like we were so spoiled those years that like, and I guess like it did get better. Like London 2017 was really good. Yeah. Berlin was sick in 2018, even though I didn't run that well. And even Commonwealth actually was really good. But I just, yeah, I just don't, it doesn't do anything for me. Like there not being a crowd, like I love traveling. I miss it. Like I love going to like Lausanne, Monaco, wherever, like being able to go out for coffee. Like it's just those little things. Like what I hear about the Olympics and like having to go and sit in a hotel room for 3 days and like the British aren't allowed to mix with other countries because we're like worse or whatever. Like it's just, I just I honestly don't even think I could do it.
So you almost wouldn't enjoy being there if it was in that state. And I think, yeah, I think there's a few people out there who would probably agree with that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and like fair play to people that have like managed to, you know, get through it. And I do also think that we're seeing like some of that younger generation like make teams because few of the older people are used to like what I'm used to.
Yeah.
Whereas the younger generation like don't have as much of that experience at major champs. So like it's not really any different for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then me being a bit selfish, I just think they should be hosting, you know, major champs at nations where they know they can fill stadiums. Yeah. I mean, Oregon's next year. And you would bet that's going to be absolutely mental. Like,
yeah,
I'm just like, why don't they just host the Worlds there every year? Like,
I know.
Why do you have to go to Moscow or, you know, places like that where it's just not full?
Yeah.
Host it in the same place every year and just make it like an event everyone knows about, you know?
Yeah. Like you can look at like, there's some diamond leagues that always have like massive crowds and really good atmospheres. And there's some that are like terrible. Like it's not hard to work out. Like,
Yeah,
like Doha was obviously kind of similar to Rio. It was just like there was no atmosphere and that, it was difficult.
Mm. That's it. I mean, it's just where all the politics comes in, though.
Oh, money sucks.
Obviously, yeah. We touched upon it earlier anyway, but obviously there's that that new Eugene next year. So I guess just best of luck with your prep for that and recovering from the baby, I guess.
Thank you so much.
Is Butchard going to put a shift in when the baby's born? Are you just going to pass the reins over? Just say, there you go, Andy.
He keeps saying, like, I honestly don't know, because he's like, do you think he fit an altitude camp in before? I'm like, no. It's like, I'll be lucky if he's even here. But no, he is really excited. And like, everyone says, like, he'll be an amazing dad. Like, he's so much fun. He'll be the fun one. So no.
Yeah. Look, it's been brilliant to have you, Lindsay. So thanks for coming on. It's tied in really well after Butchard as well. So
well, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening, guys. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. As always, if you did, please leave us a rating and a review on your preferred podcast streaming service, as it really helps us out.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.